Hello there, RiderFlex Nation. Steve Urban here with more career advice and job interviewing tips for you. And as a quick reminder, if you enjoy our podcast, please remember to subscribe to our channel and like the episodes. Well, on today's podcast, we have Dr. Brian Davidson, the founder and CEO of Intrinsic Institute. So you grew up on a farm?
I'm a small town Iowa guy. So yeah, I grew up in Harlan, Iowa. Family of, you know, all my aunts and uncles, grandparents, all farmers. My parents were not farmers themselves, but I grew up in small town Iowa, little Harlan, Iowa. Went over to the University of Iowa and picked up a degree in psych, and then realized.
Now, why did you decide psychology? How did you know? Walk me through that.
I'm always fascinated what makes people tick. You know, why do people act and behave as they do? And so, you know, a lot of us that have that curiosity, we tend to wind ourselves into the psych fields in some way, shape, or form. And so, yeah.
So neither one of your parents were in that field?
Nope. I would say I kind of got a taste of that. My mom was in the HR industry. And so that's where I think a lot of that curiosity came from. Really interested in what makes people excel. And, you know, started to, I would say, teach me about some of these things at an early age, and just continued on with it.
Now, that curiosity, does that mean you're one of those guys, or you're just constantly asking people questions because you're trying to get inside their head? You go out to dinner with a couple you barely met, and you're just hitting them.
It doesn't stop.
You know, that's it. I get my wife. We'll go to dinner with somebody new that we've met, and my wife will be doing this to me, saying, "Stop interviewing them. Stop interviewing them." Because I'm the same way. I'm just fascinated. I just want to know, right? Maybe not from a psych perspective, but I'm like that. So I get it. So you were a very curious kid early on, and so that just tied right into what you wanted to major in.
Yep. So yeah, I picked up that degree in psych, and then I realized you can't do a whole lot with a degree in psych, and so. So I backed it up with secondary education and took my first job as a teacher, high school teacher, up in the Twin Cities.
Okay. In Minnesota, any reason in particular you went to Minnesota for that job? Or that's just
followed my then girlfriend, now wife, up there.
So, Okay. All right. So you were a teacher first.
So we trekked up north. Yeah. And when I was teaching, I was, again, just super fascinated on what made my kids successful.
I see.
And I thought it came down to two key factors at that stage in the game: intrinsic motivation and self-discipline. And so I wanted to figure out how those qualities develop in people.
I see. Okay. Now, at that time, are you starting to think like an entrepreneur? Like, I want to create? No. Okay. All right.
So at that point in time, I thought I was going to become a psychologist. And so that's why I came down to the University of Kansas, started in a PhD in psychology.
I started
to learn about all these constructs like grit and resilience, hope, self-efficacy, self-control. And I was actually doing a rotation at a university counseling center providing therapy for people with anxiety and depression.
Okay.
And I just started to think, yeah, we've got this backwards. We are so reactive in how we respond to all these issues. I said, could we possibly, with my background in education, I was thinking, you know, can we teach these things? Can we teach people to become more resilient? Can we teach them to become more motivated? Can we teach them, you know, perseverance, or at least cultivate these qualities in people to help them succeed? And so that's really when I started to have the ideas for Intrinsic start to develop. So this would have been back in 2008, 2009.
Okay.
All right. I would sit there and I would talk about it with my wife. I would sit there and think, right? And my wife would just get so annoyed. She'd be like, do something about it. You know,
wow. If you want to do this.
And so she actually bought me a little journal to write down my ideas. And that was like...
This is while you're getting your master's, or you're already working on your doctorate at this point?
So I came in as a PhD student, but I was working on the master's. So you complete the master's first typically, and then you... Yeah. Continue on and finish up the PhD. And so I started to write down these ideas, and that was a really pivotal time because it just allowed me to really pull those ideas together, you know, because I was quite scattered, you know, as far as figuring out like, what do I really want to do and how can we use this? Because that was a big challenge for me is there's not even a clear language to talk about a lot of these factors that we discuss in the research world. And so I'm really trying to pull it together to figure out how can you make an organization out of this. That was a big challenge for me.
I see. Okay. Now, I have to ask, you know, real world stuff here, because I know some of the listeners are going to be thinking. So how are you surviving at this point? You're a school teacher, which doesn't make very much money, I'm guessing, in Minnesota. Yep. Somehow you walk away from that job to go get your master's and your doctorate. And while you're having these entrepreneurial ideas, I'm guessing you're not working. Or maybe you were. How do you? Because a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, their big question is, how the hell do you survive during these phases like that? What can you? Do you mind sharing some of that?
Yeah. So one thing that I knew. Okay, this is again back in 2008, 2009, when I was in my PhD program. I knew that if I were to continue on in that PhD, so this is in the heart of the recession. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Right.
That all these academic positions were evaporating. There's nothing available. You know, the market was really, really pretty grim. Mm. And so what was happening is, you know, a lot of these students were having to, instead of getting research positions and teaching positions that would pay your tuition, mm-hmm. they were having to take out loans to pay their own tuition.
Yep.
And so one thing that I knew is if I wanted to really create Intrinsic, that I had to find a way to get out of school debt free.
Okay.
And so then I started to rethink my options with all of this. And what I ended up doing was I switched from my counseling psych program, which is a full-time doctoral program, 6-year program, over to Ed Leadership and Policy Studies. And that program allowed me to return back to teach full-time.
Oh, I see.
As I was finishing up graduate school. So then I could get myself out of school debt-free, learn the knowledge. And also, too, with the Ed Leadership program, you know, I had coursework in business management and HR. And so I thought that would be beneficial for me come time for developing Intrinsic.
I see.
A little bit of that skill set in place.
Great move. Great move on your part. So you came out with a doctorate with no debt.
Correct. Yep.
Wow. That's a major accomplishment. Wow. Okay. So, all right. So you're moving through the doctorate. You're also working. And you're writing in your journal about the business you want to create. Yeah, go ahead.
So yeah, I mean, really, at that point in time, I was growing really interested in leadership and leadership development.
Okay.
And so for my dissertation, we actually looked at the relationship of these non-cognitive skills, grit and hope, were the two that we looked at, and the relationship of those factors to transformational leadership behavior. And we basically found that these non-cognitive skills, grit and hope, were the best predictors of who is going to be a successful leader.
Wow.
An organization.
Wow. Okay.
And so it just continued to reinforce that, hey, these things are important. Okay. That these things are needed and valued within organizations and individually for people. So it just gave me the confidence to say, okay, let's go forward with this.
Okay. All right.
So.
And then go ahead.
Then I took the leap. You know, my wife is a big reason why I'm standing here today.
That's great.
And at this point, that's something I've learned as an entrepreneur is you can't do it alone. You know, you need people around you that can support you. You know, people often say, you know, the great times are awesome in entrepreneurship and the low times are brutal, right? And you need people around you that can support you through all those time periods. And
because you're going to her saying, hey, I'm done with my doctorate, by the way, I'm going to walk away from this paying job and I'm going to start an Intrinsic Institute.
Exactly. But now keep in mind, you know, I've been wanting to do this for, at this point in time, four or five years.
Yeah, gotcha.
So this has been kind of the plan to do this.
Okay.
But it was, it's always like, how do you go from where you're at right now to where you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you get to that point? I remember just thinking, it just seems like a monumental step. You know, how do I create a company? Yeah, in those early stages, like, how do I simply do this? I was a teacher, you know.
So what's the first thing you did? Walk us through a few of those early steps there. You filed for the LLC. You thought up of a name. You went on GoDaddy and found a URL. I mean,
exactly. Did all that stuff, right? And so my first client was actually the University of Kansas, and so it's really a consulting position.
Gotcha.
After my dissertation, you know, what we realized is there's great potential and application for all this to help out educational institutions.
So your relationship skills there and the people you knew at the university, boom, that gave you your first client, first paying client?
First paying client. Yep.
Wow. Yeah. Good move. Another good move.
Yep. And so, and then from there, I was just trying to figure out, which area do we take this? Okay, so these skills, they apply to everybody. It doesn't matter whether or not you are a seventh grader in middle school, okay, or a CEO of an organization. We all need levels of resilience and grit and motivation, right, the perseverance. We all need these things.
Okay.
So what I struggled with early on is trying to figure out which area do we go after, okay? I came out of education, and so that was kind of the area that we initially spent our focus on. I'd written up a 170-page curriculum set designed to foster these skills, and that's where we initially started, was focusing on helping educational institutions foster these skills in students.
And what were the universities purchasing at that point? What were they buying?
For high school, primarily high school. High schools throughout the country and actually across the world. But so they were purchasing this curriculum set. And then I would often go in and do workshops and trainings as well. So really how things started, where I was often brought in as kind of this expert, so to speak, in these areas that we're finding to be important for a lot of positive life outcomes.
So that's how it started, the curriculum set. And if I was a superintendent, I would have purchased that back then because – it would have helped me identify.
Help kids cultivate kids. Skills. Help, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so in the early stages, we were trying to validate an assessment both for the K through 12 side as well as the adult population.
Okay.
And by this point in time, I'd brought on my partner, Dr. Troy Morgan. And we were having these conversations about which areas should we go after. And we decided, the adult world just makes a lot more sense. Number one, it's really hard to get enough data on kids in order to validate an assessment. You need a huge sample set, sample size in order to validate an assessment like this. We need like 1,500 people to take an assessment. And you can't give them anything in return at that stage, right?
I see.
So you got to convince a whole bunch of people to spend quite a bit of time to answer a whole bunch of questions.
Oh, okay.
All right. And so we decided to put our sole focus on the adult population. And that was probably our biggest hurdle for us early on, was figuring out how do you
turn that into revenue?
How can we validate this assessment? It's a brutal process, Steve, to get this done and just getting that much data. I mean, my dissertation at KU, what we collected data on well over 100 leaders in educational institutions, and that took me a year just to get that sample size. And so
but very little revenue coming in at that point.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's the sacrifice piece. By the way, did you go after Troy because you wanted a partner, you didn't want to be by yourself, or Troy was could help open doors, or he had a skill set you didn't have? What was the reason for that partnership?
Yeah, I wanted to find somebody that would join me in the journey. Yeah. As an entrepreneur, it's a lonely gig.
You got that right. That's why I called Scott when we started RiderFlex. I said, hey, man, come help me do this.
You're always better, with people around you.
Yes.
And so at this point in time, Troy was teaching at Metropolitan State University.
Okay.
And he recently finished up his dissertation where he looked at grit and student athlete success.
Oh.
And at this point in time, we were actually just starting to have some conversations about applications of all of this for recruiting purposes in athletics. Who do you use a tool like this to help identify individuals with high motivation, high grit, high resilience, help develop a high character team, right? So I found Troy because Troy did his dissertation on grit and student athlete success down at the University of New Mexico. And I said, I wondered about the applications of all this in sports. I came out of this from education, but I've wondered about using this in sports. And he said, Brian, I was a former Major League Baseball scout for the Marlins.
Gotcha.
And he said, they were basically, they had, I think, the fourth pick in the draft or something like that. And and they were trying to decide who to draft. He said, we had no way to understand the mental side of the players. We could look at every single metric from their physical abilities, but we had no way to really capture.
Now, is this before some sports teams started using some testing like Wonderlic and some others?
So Wonderlic's measuring IQ.
I see.
But we're measuring non-cognitive factors.
And nobody else was doing that at the time.
correct. Yeah.
I see.
This is kind of a new body of research that's emerging.
I see.
You know, so could we use these concepts of grit and resilience to help us select individuals?
Okay.
And that's when Troy really jumped on board. We had similar visions with everything.
Ah.
And, you know, just hit it off. Just
now, now my mind is racing towards, okay, now I'm selling a product to sports teams to help them make better decisions for athletes. Now the dollars are turning.
Yep.
Anyway, go ahead. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
So then we did this study with this Division II football program, a big powerhouse program, Northwest Missouri State.
Okay.
And I think they've won like six of the past, I don't know, yeah, six championships in the past 20 years or something like that.
Okay. Okay.
So we wanted to figure out like what makes these guys tick. And so we first had the coaching staff take the assessment, and they scored sky high. And then we had the student athletes take the assessment. And then we had the coaches evaluate the student athletes on all these intangible areas outside of their athletic ability, like their work ethic, their leadership skills, their mental toughness, their attitude. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to figure out, might these non-cognitive skills help to predict those intangible areas of those student athletes?
Okay.
And we found that it did.
Ah, okay. I see.
The best predictors were the student athletes' levels of self-efficacy, which is like your confidence to accomplish your goals, their self-control, so like their ability to resist temptations, delay gratification, have an impulse control. But the best predictor that we found, which was a real big surprise, was the player's integrity levels, which really? We thought, like, what on earth does this have to do with, you know, performance in football and how these coaches would evaluate these players, but that showed up to be the best predictor of.
Is that right? Okay.
Coaches scored all these student athletes. And so that just gave us, you know, because, well, Troy and I, you know, we're like researchers, right? So we want to get the evidence before we move forward with something. And so that gave us the evidence to say, okay, yeah, we're hitting on something here.
You know, so a lot of people, if we can pause right there, I think a lot of people think entrepreneurs have this clean, finished idea, and then they get funding, and then they start, and then revenue comes in, and then they sell it and make a bunch of money, and it just happens that cleanly. And really, most of the time, it's not, right? It was some sort of idea that pivoted and changed and molded and tweaked as you went through those first few years, which is exactly what happened to you, it sounds like.
No doubt about it. And I often say, you know, we follow our own model. So we're measuring, you know, motivation and perseverance, adaptability. And this is what you have to do as an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. right? It takes grit.
You got that right.
you got to persevere over the long term.
So as the product stands today, can you just, as it is now, Intrinsic Institute, in a couple of sentences, describe it for the listeners. What is it as of right now?
So what we've developed is basically a psychological assessment that measures a person's mindset.
Okay.
What we are capturing is whether or not the individual is feeling highly self-motivated, really disciplined and perseverant, able to adjust well to change and bounce back from adversity, and to do all that with a level of integrity.
That right there, that little short description, I could see where that would apply to, and just because an athlete is super strong or super fast, you know, he runs the 40 and whatever, if he doesn't have everything else you just mentioned, there's trouble down the road, right? That's basically, yeah.
Exactly. And so that's what we're thinking is, you know, to be a lot more proactive in understanding who you're bringing onto your team rather than a very reactive approach. Okay.
And the proactive piece, does that come into play because the testing is a snapshot in time of how they're doing?
Yeah. So this has been kind of the crazy thing that we've noticed, Steve, is when we first developed all of this, we thought, yeah, we're going to find out who's got grit, who's got resilience, like who's got these traits, right? These qualities about them. And what we've learned is it's so much more complex than that. Okay. Mm-hmm. What we've come to understand is we're really capturing how is that person thinking and feeling at this point in time. So the assessment really is much more of a gauge. Now, it's not like these things change from day to day. Okay. They're much more stable than that, but they are malleable. And what we've found is when we assess people, we'll have these people high performing individuals, you know, amazing titles and make gobs of money throughout their life. And we come to find out that they score low in several areas or many areas. And we start to have conversations with them and say, you know, why exactly did you respond on the assessment this particular way? And mm-hmm. here we come to find out that, you know, they might have some significant diagnosis, like they're recently diagnosed with cancer. They're going through a divorce in their relationship. We've just had really interesting, fascinating discussions where we have come to understand everything that's happening in a person's external environment. Okay, that influences your mindset. Okay, these skills, these non-cognitive skills that we're measuring, they don't exist in a vacuum, but instead they're influenced by everything that's going on in a person's life. If you've got a real crappy manager that's leading your department, okay, they can have a negative influence on these skills. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, you know, a great leader, a transformational leader, can do the exact opposite, where they can cultivate these skills. They can take somebody who's not feeling highly motivated and perseverant and gritty and cultivate that in those individuals.
So let's talk about that. Yeah. So if I'm a coach or if I'm a CEO and I'm using Intrinsic to identify these things in individuals, yeah, then what am I doing with it? I'm grabbing that information and I'm having my supervisors and human resource people talk, like, how am I using your information to make them stronger?
You know, what we know is that what gets measured is what gets managed.
Okay.
So you can't really do much with anything unless you can really see it, until you can quantify it. Mm. So the first step is to try to measure these skills, get a snapshot for where your people are at. Okay. Then what we've done is developed a software platform to allow an organizational leader to be able to see the scores of their people. And so you have that data, okay, you can now have those proactive conversations with them. And then we put in these tips and recommendations for what that organizational leader can do to help cultivate these skills in every single person. And then something else that we've added in is the ability to look at subgroups. So we customize every single dashboard and each assessment for that organization. Now, all the non-cognitive assessment items are exactly the same, but we can add supplemental questions to ask, you know, which department do they work in? And so now you can break down the data to say, in the HR department, for instance, what are our collective scores in that department? What's our collective scores in the, you know, sales and marketing area? Okay, what's the collective scores of our corporate leadership team? You know, all these different areas. We can look at, we did some testing with Janssen and Johnson & Johnson. And so we could break it down based off of how long they've been within the organization to see, based off of these different subgroups, people that have been within the organization for just 1 to 2 years versus, you know, 3 to 5 years. What's happening with the levels of motivation, the levels of perseverance and grit, resilience over time of these individuals and these subgroup elements?
Have you sold it? Have you sold the product to people that got this great data? They took advantage of it. They used it to coach and mentor and communicate with their people. And then you've gone back to those organizations and they've said, oh my gosh, you know, is the company that old, and or have you been alive long enough?
We are at that point right now. So we launched the software platform just last year.
Okay.
So we're starting to now get some of that data within organizations. And then what we've added in too is ability to reassess people over time. So now if you assess them in 2019, you can assess them in 2020 to see what's going on over time.
I mean, if you get the CEO for Johnson & Johnson to say, hey, we used their stuff last year, it helped us identify ABC, because of that we did this, and now our people are better, and there's a testimonial around that, boom, home run. A lot more people are buying the product.
Yeah, yeah. Well, keep our fingers crossed.
That's great. Okay, all right, good, good. By the way, for the listeners, just so they know, I kind of got to cheat a little bit and take the test early, and you've also shown me a short demo of the dashboard with the data. So, it's just so the listeners understand, it's really nothing like Myers-Briggs or DISC or Wunderlich or any of the rest of them. You know, if for those listeners that have taken all those personality tests and you've gotten this kind of short scoreboard or dashboard, I mean, your product is 100 times deeper with information, you know, from anything that I've seen. And like you said, it can break down all these subfolders and categories and departments within the building. Really, really fascinating stuff for sure. Right. And it goes way beyond anything else I've ever seen. Just so
you know, with a lot of those other assessments, Steve, you know, they're designed to categorize somebody. They put you into a category. They're going to label you as a green or a red or maybe an antelope or a jackrabbit or
whatever. Yeah,
I know. Filler, you know, it goes on and on. It's beneficial to a certain extent for self-awareness purposes. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it's very limited in the fact that we feel that human behavior exists along a continuum.
Right. That's the key.
What I try to do is provide a snapshot for where the person's mindset is at and all these factors that are research-based constructs.
That's the most fascinating part of your product that I love. As a former CEO, COO myself, having run teams of a couple hundred people, if I had a product, you know, back then that would help me identify people that might be going through problems of some sort that I didn't know about, right? Like I knew they had a certain skill set, but their grit score was off or whatever. If I had that, and I could dig into to what was bothering them or what was wrong sooner before something had happened and they quit or whatever, or we fired them because of poor performance, I could have saved a lot more people. I'm probably mentored and shaped a lot more lives than I actually did if I'd have had that data. That's the what makes the product attractive for me as a former C-level guy.
Because now you can do something, right?
Right, you can do something.
Proactive manner versus just waiting until they quit.
Yes.
And say, like, I'm done with it. We've seen this personally where we assessed some healthcare professionals and we had an individual who they said was a great employee who didn't score, you know, tremendously well. And we had a conversation with this person and she went on to say that she's been working really hard over the past several years and just didn't feel like she could keep doing it much longer. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that level of grit and that sense of perseverance just wasn't there. Mm. And so now as an organization, they say, geez, this is a great person, right? We don't want to lose this employee.
Exactly.
So we need to figure out, A, what's going on, okay? And then to redesign some things or maybe put this person into a different position so that way we don't lose them.
You know, this ties right into a podcast I've done on a topic a couple of times. I actually believe in hiring fast and firing slow, which is opposite from what most people have heard, right? That old term of, you know, hire slow and fire fast. I'm the opposite. I firmly believe in firing slow, meaning, you know, if you've gone to all this trouble to onboard and mentor and train somebody and you've invested all this time in them, why fire them quickly if you start to see signs of trouble? You should you know, try to fix the situation and mentor them through it. And this tool that you have is a great way to help do that, right? So that you're not just firing people fast. You're helping identify what might be wrong and then.
Well, it's really costly, right, to replace an employee.
Yeah, big time.
It takes time to get the next person up to speed.
Yes. So how do people? So if you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, man, I want to try this product, or I want to contact Brian, or I want to sign up, or I want to get a demo. Can you kind of direct them a little bit there?
Yeah, I'll just say go to our website, intrinsicinstitute.com, and there's a demo button up at the top. Reach out to us, and we can set up a time to do a demo.
Is it super? I mean, I don't know if you want to go into pricing on this podcast, but my next immediate thought as the CEO would be, how much does this cost? is it affordable, or are there different price ranges, or is it by person, or how does that work?
Yeah, so our model is we've got a bundled price per user model. So we basically, with more assessments that we provide, we drop the price.
Okay.
For that organization. So, we can, of course, go over all that.
Okay. How'd you come up with the name, by the way? How did you decide on Intrinsic Institute?
So Intrinsic's all about within. Okay. And keep in mind, I'm an educator, right? I think there's greatness within every single person, you know, that we experience. And so it's a matter of us like pulling that out of the person. And so all these skills, grit, resilience, like we can all be gritty. We can all be resilient. And it's just a matter of really igniting that and pulling that out of people. And so that's where the intrinsic comes from. And then the Institute, it's research based. You know, it's this
gotcha.
Not a bunch of fluff, but rather, you know, these are concepts that have been studied for years and largely the psychological literature. So we've combined all these into one model and developed an assessment from there.
What's been the biggest hurdle so far? Or maybe even throw that, maybe even say scariest moment, either way, however you want to describe it. What would you call that? Or how would you describe that?
Validating the assessment was such a huge hurdle just because it takes so much time. This is not something that you can do within a year, mm-hmm. right? Research is a very slow process, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and it takes just a ton of perseverance to be able to do it, to get that data. And that was probably the biggest challenge for us, was figuring out, you know, how can we get a sample size large enough to do the factor analysis, which is just the statistical test that you have to do in order to validate an assessment like this.
Well, not to put your wife on the spot, was there ever a moment where, you know, she's looking at you saying, hey, can you please just go back and be a teacher because we really just need steady money right now?
No doubt about it. I mean, yeah, there's times of doubt. There's times of tears, right? Yeah, it's
right.
Like, you know, we don't know if we can go on much further. We've got two kids.
Right.
Right. And so when you take that risk as an entrepreneur with a family, that's super scary.
Super scary. Especially with two little kids at home.
So, you know, but you've got to stick to the vision, right? And that passion, I think, is what gets you through all that. And on top of that, you have people around you that you can lean on, ask for advice, and they help get you through those tough times.
You know, you mentioned a second ago how important it is for your spouse or your partner to be behind you. It's so true. And my wife is the same, you know, when we started RiderFlex, there were many times when, you know, she would say, hey, are you, we're going to put in any money in the bank this week? Because, you know, the checkbook's at zero. And she would go through those stressful moments, but at the same time, and maybe even in the same day, if there was something negative being said about RiderFlex or somebody was attacking RiderFlex in any way, she would pounce on the situation passionately, meaning she was like protecting the brand. Like, you know what I mean? She was like this tiger that was, you know, would attack anybody that was, that might hurt the brand. And that's how she was. She's like, yeah, okay. I don't like the fact that money's tight, but I'm in this with you and I'll do whatever it takes to make it happen. And that's just so important, especially when you got kids at home and you're taking all kinds of major risks. So it's great that she's been behind you during this time. I know there's been scary moments, my friend. I'm sure there's been a few times you wake up at 3 a.m. and you're kind of in a sweat and you're walking around in your living room going, oh my gosh, what?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's some people who say, you know, I've never had a doubt, right? I think that's baloney.
That's baloney. Right?
it does. And to me, it's a matter of whether or not you can
The grit. By the way, every time I hear the word grit, because I'm an old guy, I can't hardly not have the picture of John Wayne in my head visually when I hear the word because of the old movie. But anyway, so, okay. And then biggest wins so far, was the university being your first client the biggest win, or what's another major milestone so far? You know,
a really cool one that I'm really excited about right now is, so we're going to be testing cadets at the United States Military Academy in West Point.
Awesome.
So just kind of personally, that's a really rewarding experience to know that we're going to be able to support these cadets who are working so hard to support our country. It's a really, really cool experience. They're going to be using this to assess, a whole bunch of cadets to help optimize performance of these individuals.
That's a major win.
Multiple research projects out of this. In fact, just had a conversation 2 days ago with a colonel there. So we're going to be trying to do a little research on the side with all of this and then also help them to succeed and do well.
You talk about validation or reference. It's like, you know, you're able to say, hey, listen, you know, West Point uses our product, so yeah, it must be pretty good.
So often it's because of the people around you. And there's a professor by the name of Mike Matthews there who has studied these topics for 30 years. Much of the research that he's done throughout his career has been instrumental for me in helping to develop our theory and our model. So he studied grit. He studied hardiness and resilience. And those ideas and his research has been a foundation for much of what we've created.
And that's great.
Because of him, you know, he's one of the people in the world that really know these skills at a very high level. And so he really understands what we have done and with developing this assessment. And so
he helped you, get in the door there. He was a contact to get in the door at West Point.
Yep.
That's great. That's a good example for the listeners on how important relationships are and networking. I mean, it's critical. You gotta, even if you have a good product, if you don't have good people skills, good networking and good communication, you know, nothing happens. Yeah. So at this point, it's just you and Troy, just you guys, but so you haven't started hiring up yet, but, and then are you going to raise cash? Or are you getting close to hiring employees? Where are you at there in the life cycle?
Yeah, so this is our next hurdle right now. We're trying to figure out, one of our big needs is we've got two kind of more research scientist type of minds that have developed the product. And what we need right now is somebody with more of that business development mind to help us take this out there to the world. And so we're trying to figure out how to best, bring on that person on board. Yeah, should we go out and try to raise some capital and go that route to build up the team? Should we look at uniting with another organization? So we're looking at multiple avenues right now.
Okay. So when you look for the, you know, your first hire, so to speak, or your first or your next new partner, describe that person to me for the culture that you and Troy want to build, which I think is critical. You know, the type of culture you want your company to have.
Mm-hmm.
Describe this person to me.
Well, you know, the things that we value are, you know, helping individuals and organizations optimize performance. So somebody that's, you know, just passionate about human development and performance optimization, number one. Secondly, somebody, again, that's really got that business mind that thrives off of trying to go out there and find that next client, find that next customer, and also close the deal too. it's one thing, you know, to go out and just network with people, but it's another thing to go out and close the deal. So we need that individual that is really passionate about doing that and that finds great joy in that hunt.
I mean, I'm assuming they're going to have to take the test to get hired. Right.
It's always good to know, right?
Yeah, I'm assuming that's going to be part of your hiring process. You know, employees is a whole nother world, my friend, which you'll soon. Well, you've dealt with students, so
sure,
yeah. Similar. I'm similar.
Yeah. But again, our hope is that we can use our own tool with our own employees,
to get
that gauge for where they're at. And we know that people are going to thrive when they are utilizing their strengths on a regular basis. You know, if they're not doing what they, you know, find as one of their strengths, if they're constantly pushed into some sort of role where they're not able to utilize those strengths on a regular basis, yeah, people will become quickly unmotivated.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So if I'm an angel investor or something and I'm listening to this podcast and I'm thinking, I might want to talk to Brian. I might want to invest. Is that also a phone call you're taking those calls to?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But you already have revenue and you're already cash flow positive to a certain degree. I mean, you're paying yourself something. Cash is coming in. You don't have to raise cash next month or you're out of business or something crazy like that, but you will entertain the call. Is that accurate?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. And so you're kind of open at this point, whether it's capital raise or maybe a sales biz dev person to help drive revenue. You're kind of open to all discussion.
Oh, yeah, I think the goal of raising the capital would be to bring on that team member, right? Or team members.
Okay. Yeah.
And then another thing that we want to do is develop online learning modules. So
okay.
Remember, okay. I've written up a whole curriculum set designed to foster these factors.
Okay. Okay.
And so the goal is to convert that into some online learning modules. So now you could assess somebody in these skills and then have a set of solutions designed to help them foster these skills.
And these modules, you'll need cash to pay developers to build.
Correct.
Okay. Got it. All right. I just wanted to, in case there's investors, that end up listening to the podcast. Okay. Yeah. Great. Well, I the product, by the way, when I took the test, I thought it was great, but I was super impressed with the data and the dashboard and all the stuff that I saw you demo. Really impressive stuff. I think if people are interested, they listen to this, they contact you and they want a demo, I would encourage that for anybody out there. And, you know, even me, just so you know, before we did the podcast, I'm not a huge fan of all the tests. I never was like, oh my God, we got to do a personality test or an IQ test. So I wasn't ever a huge fan. And even when Chad Freehoff, our friend Chad Freehoff, introduced us and I found out what you did for a living, I'll just tell you, quite honestly, at first I was like, I don't know. I've done all those tests, yeah. You know. But really, Brian, I mean this sincerely. The data that came back and the dashboard you showed me was pretty darn impressive, better than anything I've seen. And I'm not just saying that just because you're on the podcast. It was good. And so I would encourage anybody that's interested to at least reach out to you and get a demo for sure. I think they'll be impressed.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Steve.
So at this point, is it grow the company and sell it someday, and then buy a giant farm in Iowa, or what's the plan?
Who knows? Hey, again, if I would ask myself, you know, 10 years ago, would I be doing this? Like, no, I had no idea. Would I be, you know, would I have validated a test? No, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, early on in my doc program,
yeah,
you know, I treated research like the plague. What I've just learned is you just never know, but you continue on the path of what you're passionate about, and you stay open to opportunities, and you just never know.
You know, you're super passionate about what you are doing. Congrats on everything you've done so far. First of all, to come out of school with your doctorate with no debt. I mean, that alone is a major accomplishment. And then, you know, you made the leap. You had the guts to walk away from a safe, secure teaching job, which you could have probably done forever because you have your doctorate, and you took that leap to be an entrepreneur, and you're still going through those scary moments. That's the whole thing. When I meet people, they're just scared. So many people I talk to want to be an entrepreneur. They have some sort of idea, or they want to own their own business or whatever. But they're scared. They're scared. They think that, well, I got this job, and it, you know, I get paid a certain amount every 2 weeks, and it's secure, or at least they think it is. And they just can't take the leap. They're just scared to take it. I would just encourage people listening, if you have the desire to start a business or be a business owner and be an entrepreneur, you just have to go for it. You just have to eventually make the decision and go for it. I don't know any other way to describe it. It's going to be scary. It's going to be tough. It's going to be super hard. All those things are going to be there. But if you don't do it, then you're going to wake up at 60 years old one day and regret it. Because if you try it and it doesn't work, you can always just go back to teaching. Right, Brian? I mean,
Steve, I'll share this. I remember having a conversation with one of my best buddies, and I was sitting here like, gosh, you know, should I take the leap? Can I do this? Am I capable of doing it?
Right.
And we're having this conversation, and he said, you know, like, what would you want to say to your if you're 10 years older, right? What would you want to say to yourself today? And I was thinking about it, and I said, you know, someday I want to look my son in the eye.
Yeah.
And say, Dad went for it.
That's awesome.
And whether or not Dad's successful or not, I can at least say I went after it.
And right? he'll be proud of you either way.
Because that's what I want him to do someday.
And that's great. That's
right?
Really good.
And so
good.
If we can do that, right?
But you're doing it. You're doing it, my friend.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. It's a journey, though, right?
Riderflex has been alive for 2.5 years. I wouldn't trade it for any amount of money. Wouldn't trade it for anything. Scott and I talked about that just the other night. We were at dinner, my partner, and wouldn't trade it for anything. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's scary, but it's fun.
So what do you think it is that allows somebody to survive and keep going?
Your stuff, right? Grit. You named them. What are the things? What are the key things you're measuring?
Like a sense of motivation, a self-efficacy, yes. Like a sense of purpose in what you're doing, self-determination.
All those. I mean, it's life is just too short to go to a job that you don't really like and wish every day you were doing something else. The sad part is, too, Brian, is all these folks – I actually had this happen. We're almost out of time, but for the listeners, I actually had this happen. A young lady was over at our house, friend of my son's, and I tried to get her to help us with RiderFlex when we first started because we needed some administrative help. And she said, well, I have this – other job as a manager over here at Massage Envy or whatever the store was. I can't remember. And she's like, and it's, you know, and it's guaranteed pay and it's a safe deal. And that's what I try to pound into people's heads. Like, there are no guarantees. There are no safe jobs. You can be laid off from anything at any time. And I think people get that wrapped in their head like, oh, this is a regular job, so it's safe. No, it ain't. There are no safe jobs, so just go for it. But I think people are just scared. They're living off of – that's the other thing. And now I'm going off on a rant. Everybody thinks, I got to have this much money every 2 weeks. My bills are X, Y, and Z, so I got to make A, B, C to hit my bills. And if I don't make that much, I can't survive. That's the other BS, right? No, the reality is you can make adjustments to your personal finances and your expenses. You can make the adjustments if you really decide to. You can do it. You can make those adjustments. You can get rid of the car payment. You can turn off the expensive cable channels you don't need. You can do things. You actually can make adjustments. And that's the other thing I encourage people to do is stop thinking that you got to make a certain amount every 2 weeks. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. You can do it. Anyway, I'm going off on a rant. I'm not.
We all have one life to live.
Yes.
And so, like, why not go for it?
Why not go for it? Why not go for it? You can always just go back and get a regular job. That's the other thing I tell them. If it doesn't work, what's the worst case scenario? You go back to what you were doing in a regular job. No big deal. Mm-hmm. Right? Anyway, yeah. Hopefully some of this stuff is reaching these people listening that want to be entrepreneurs, because I encourage them to go for it. Well, listen, congratulations, my friend. I mean, hey, you know, great education, and then you went for it, and now you've actually got it going well enough to feed your family and pay your bills, and it's building, and you're getting into West Point. It's starting the flywheel effect is starting to happen, right? And so now it's moving for you. Pretty soon you're going to be hiring employees, which, by the way, means you need to call me back so RiderFlex can do the recruiting for you.
Right. That's right.
But really, congrats on everything you've done so far. It's a great product from everything I've seen. Really happy for you. So,
thanks so much, Steve.
I appreciate you being on the RiderFlex show. Thank you, Brian.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. We truly hope you find our material helpful and entertaining. And while our podcast can be heard across most platforms, including iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, YouTube, and SoundCloud, you can become a supporter of this podcast by visiting our show on the platform Anchor FM. That's anchor.fm/RiderFlex. You can also send us your questions or suggested topics for future episodes to the email address podcast@RiderFlex.com. Or drop us a voicemail at 888-964-5876, extension 710. Visit RiderFlex.com to learn more about us. Thanks so much for listening, folks, and have a great day.